Today's guest is a good friend of ours and is responsible for much of the videography work that you have enjoyed in the firearms industry over the past 4 years. Chad Barber may not have his name stamped on his own YouTube channel, but it's safe to say that his camera and editing work have hundreds of millions of views on both YouTube and Instagram. In this episode, we sit down and learn about his past, present, and future goals. Before we go too far though, we have to thank Shooting Surplus for sponsoring this video. Guys, we know that the content we tend to cover are expensive topics, but we do have a discount code in the description, so go ahead and check that out. And if you want to support us, check out our Patreon and consider subscribing to the channel. This is the Dirty Civilian Podcast. Please welcome Chad Barber.
Well, I know your story. Josh does not.
True.
And I'm interested to hear it in chronological fashion, because though I've known you for like 6 or 7 years, I only get bits and pieces, and every bit and piece that I get is a wild story. So connecting all the dots for me and for the listeners is going to be pretty cool.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know where you want to start.
Well, where do you want to start?
Well, I was under the impression for the longest time that you were from Colorado.
Yeah.
Because when I became aware of you, you were living in Colorado.
Yeah.
And then later on, I figured out you were born in New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Were you born there, or did you grow up there?
Yeah, so born and raised in New Mexico. Was there till I was about 21-ish. And then I moved to Colorado for like 6 years-ish. And then moved back to New Mexico, and that's actually when I got into firearms.
Hmm. Gotcha. See, I know you as a cameraman. When did you get into camera and photography and stuff?
So, man, camera stuff, I was probably 13-ish, and I was transitioning from, like, my Little League baseball years to starting to skateboard, and, you know, I was getting really good at skateboarding, and with skateboarding, you have, you know, professionals who are putting out video parts, or, like, whatever brand it is, you know, they always make some video with like their sponsored guys, they have their own part or whatever. And I thought it was really cool. So I wanted to film my own part, not just for like the cool aspect of it, but also like a sponsor me tape.
Yeah.
So I picked up like a little JVC, like DV tape. I forget exactly what it was. And like a fisheye lens, and just like started randomly filming skate videos. And I, looking back on it now, that's definitely where like I started, like the action videography type stuff was back from skateboarding. And then that's also where I learned how to edit, because I'd have to take those tapes and then basically digitize them and throw them into I completely forget the editing software back then, but it was you know, PC from, you know, gosh, I don't know, early 2000s, whatever software it was. But that's kind of where I learned how to like cut stuff together and like add music and do all that. And I actually made a video of myself and my friends. We were all skateboarding. We had our parts, and, you know, put it on DVD, which,
wow,
is somewhere in my storage. And then I completely like fell out of skateboarding and camera stuff for a long while, actually, probably 10, 12-ish years. And then it's when I moved back to New Mexico and I got into firearms, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to start a firearm Instagram page, because that was like the cool thing to do. So not only was I developing like my firearm training skills, but at the same time I was also developing like my video shooting skills and my photo skills. So yeah, creating that Instagram page was like basically just skyrocketed my career in video and photo and whatnot.
Well, you're one of those guys who doesn't seem to pick up a gun. At least I don't see you shoot all that often, but when you do, dude, you don't lose your touch. You're very gifted.
I'm probably a little.
I mean, sure. Everyone gets a little bit rusty over time, but A, you have, you know, some natural athleticism that helps. B, you've been doing things like skating and being outside, and you know how to move your body through space and time. That helps. Here's my question, though. Being that you spent a lot of time editing and filming yourself, do you feel like you learned how to become a better shooter, or maybe also a better skateboarder, by watching yourself on camera and analyzing, like, oh man, I don't like that movement, I can clean up my draw or my reload, just because you saw yourself so much on film?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, I mean, that's one thing that's harped on, like, throughout, like, the gun community or whatever, is just, like, you know, trainers will tell you to videotape yourself and then play that back and watch your, like, every single movement. And I think that, I mean, that definitely helped progress my, like, shooting skill for sure. So, yeah, man.
Yeah, it reminds me of that story of the Vietnam POW that ran through playing a game of golf in his mind every day. And whenever he finally got back home,
he shot like two over a perfect game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hadn't touched a club or stepped on a golf course in like 7 years or something.
Yeah, it's just that constant visualization and being behind the camera, you're getting that for the longest time, like several days out of the week, for 8 hours at a time, you're watching people shooting. And then you go and edit it, you're still watching people shoot. And though you may only actually hit the range once every, like, 2 months, it's like you're always, like, honed in.
Visualizing perfection.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, like, when I was first starting out, I was consuming myself with firearm content and video creation content. So that just, like, added on top of, like, you know, trying to hone in my own skill. So, yeah.
And then that blossomed into... That firearm stuff, it seems like, blossomed over into your overlanding stuff. What was the connection there?
Oh, gosh. So the overlanding stuff, I think, kind of stems from my younger adventure self, from taking backpacking trips and hiking and just being like an outdoorsman. You know, early 20s, mid-20s, I would do... You know, week-long backpacking trips through, like, backwoods, like we've done. My buddy and I took a 5-day trip through the backcountry of, like, Tetons. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we hiked, like, 12 miles every day. And so a lot of the vehicle stuff, I feel like, has stemmed from, like, my backpacking days. And I like it better now because backpacking is a lot of work, but I just kind of finally came to the conclusion, like, it's much easier to drive a truck over a mountain than it is, like, you know, spending 12 miles on a super gnarly hike where you have a 60-pound pack on your back and you're just like, am I ever going to get to the top? And you see, like, the switchback, and you get to the top of the switchback, and then it's another one, and you're like, damn it, man. So the truck, I mean, granted, obviously with backpack, you're a little bit more mobile and you can go to a lot different places, but the vehicle stuff has been, it's been really fun.
Did you have anyone in the professional world teaching you, let's see, skateboarding, camera operating, editing, overlanding, or shooting, or are all of these self-taught?
It's all self-taught.
Oh my gosh, dude.
Yeah.
You didn't go to school for any of it?
No. I actually hated school. I was a terrible student. I had terrible grades. I hated going to school. Like, just was not about it. So I pretty much, like, I finished high school and I started down, like, going to a trade school and stuff. But that didn't work out. And, yeah, I just kind of... teach myself everything I know today and just, like, gain from experiences throughout, you know, my years. So,
well, let's go back to that. Let's go back to the beginning, to young Chad.
Oh,
I do this with everyone that comes on the podcast. I like to know,
young,
like,
Chad.
Like, what was your upbringing like? Because I think nurture is so much more important than anything else. Like, what environmental factors weighed in on the creation of this young person and the chain, the evolution of that person through their lives to where they're at today. So, like, you grew up in New Mexico.
Yeah.
What were you like as a kid?
Rebellious.
And tell us about your family a little bit, too.
Yeah. I mean, my family's great. And, you know, I think my childhood and my teen years has nothing to do with like my parents, because they were very loving and all they wanted was the best for me and to take care of me. I was just very like free-spirited and rebellious, and I wanted to do my own thing when I wanted to do it, and I wasn't gonna have like anyone tell me otherwise. And that was a huge like issue for my parents, because they're trying to parent, you know, like they're trying to like not control my life, but you know, doing the best that they can.
Yeah.
And so I was extremely rebellious teen.
Well, give me an example or several.
Okay. My parents did not like, I didn't like school, and I got bad grades.
What was it you didn't like about school?
I don't know, man. I just think it was, I just didn't have interest in it. So it wasn't something that I was like passionate about. And like, I hated the mundane, like waking up, you know, catching the bus, going to school, like going through the motions. And then, honestly, whoa, lightning over there. I think the socializing aspect of it too, because I mean, you guys obviously know this, I'm very introverted. I think that bothered me. Like, I had my set friends at school, but I just did not like being around a lot of people. So, you know, it is what it is, but because I was getting bad grades all the time, I was constantly grounded. And that didn't sit well with me, because I wanted to go skate. I wanted to go hang out with my friends, all that good stuff. So, one of the most rebellious things I did was run away from home. Like, I was grounded for 2 weeks, and I was like, you know what, screw this, like, screw my parents. And I like came up with a plan to like, you know, my friend was gonna park like a block down the street. I was gonna wait for my mom to fall
How
asleep.
How old were you?
Gosh, at that point I was 16.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you were gonna wait for your mom to fall asleep, and then.
Yep. And then hop the balcony, and then just poof, I was gone. And that's what I did.
Wait. Okay.
How long were you gone for?
Yeah, 3 hours.
No, dude, my friend picked me up, and I stayed at his house for probably a good 2 or 3 weeks.
Whoa. I'm impressed with your follow-through.
Yeah. Did your friend have parents at the house as well?
Yes.
Did those parents not rat you out, or what?
No, they were on board. Like, my mom called me freaking out, you know, and was like, where are you? And I was like, I'm done, you know? Just like... screw this, screw that, like, I can't take this anymore, like, I'm always grounded, blah, 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 just rebellious, stupid teenage stuff, you know. I mean, my friend's parents were like, I don't know why they were on board with it, but they were.
There's gotta be beef there, like, something, yeah, did they know your mom from way back in the day, and they were just
they'd been friends for a while, like my mom and my buddy's parents or whatever. Like, they went to church for a long time.
Oh.
So she might. Go ahead.
What if that was just the plan? Parents talk, dude.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I found it weird that my like mom didn't demand me to come back, you know. So I don't know. That was like a good 2 or 3 weeks. And then, you know, my brother called me and was like, hey, man, like, what do you... So my brother's 9 years older than I am. So at that time, he was in college. And he had gotten married, and, you know, they had, like, a townhome in the city, and they were just living their life. And my brother called me and was like, what are you doing, man? Like, this is ridiculous. Yeah, like, you shouldn't be living with your friends. If anything, you can come live with Anna and I, his wife. you can come live with us and like we'll figure it out. And I was like, okay, that sounds reasonable. Like, I loved my brother. He was always, he's been great. And yeah, so my brother came and picked me up and we just like, I just lived there. And yeah, I mean, there, I don't know how much of the story.
How long did that last?
That lasted a while. And then I got into some shit with my brother. And
it's like, I'm moving out. I'm moving back in with mom.
No, oh man, I feel so bad for my, and she'll tell you, she'll be like, I got all my gray hairs from you. I think every mom says that.
Yeah, of course.
She's like, all my stress and like pain and suffering has been because of you and like your rebellious teenage years. But yeah, I was living with my brother and his wife for probably a good, you know, 8 months.
Wow.
6 months, something like that. And I was trying to finish, like, get through high school. I think it was in, it was my freshman year, sophomore year, something like that. Yeah. And again, like, my brother established some rules for the house. I don't like rules. I don't like rules or authority, so.
I'm impressed by two things. Oh, sorry. Two things. First of all, I feel like we need to get your entire family and that other, your friend's family on the podcast set them down and be like, were you all in on this? Because back in like my student ministry days, the biggest thing we figured out was you could say the same thing as a parent says to a kid, but they'll listen to it because it's a voice other than their parents. And so our big like play behind the scenes was we would talk to kids' parents and be like, hey, what are you guys dealing with in the home? What can we help out with? What do you wish your kid could hear or advice that you wish someone would give them that's not directly from your mouth? And they'd be like, here's a list. And that's what we, that was part of like what we would work on and work like a charm.
Yeah.
So I wonder, man, that would be some serious Inception stuff right there. If they were all in on it.
That could be interesting. And yeah, so this whole time, like, you know, my parents divorced, like, when I was super, like, before I was born. So they had been, like, completely separated. So my entire upbringing had been, I'm living with my mom, and then, like, every other weekend, I would go stay with my dad. And, you know, that probably had definitely some effects on me back then, but so my dad, not that he was completely removed from the picture, but he was just kind of like in the background, just like observing and like, you know, somewhat making sure I was okay from afar, but kind of like still letting me like figure out like what being a man is and like, you know, me just kind of figuring myself out. Where my mom, on the other hand, was just freaking out all the time, just like, my son is a mess, you know, like.
Well, and you were probably the baby, and
yeah,
moms get a certain way around the youngest. And did you enjoy being around your dad?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he was pretty strict, but he was also, I mean, looking back on it now, which I'm sure we all do this now, but he was like one of the most wise person like I know.
Do you think you craved more time with your dad? Now looking back on it,
probably, because he's the one, he basically instilled in me like all the outdoor stuff. So he was a big hunter, you know, big camper, like we'd always go out on camping trips and fishing and just like you name it, anything outdoors. You know, he was a big sports guy, so he played varsity baseball, basketball, and football in high school.
Stud.
In his day. Yeah, he actually got a scholarship for baseball to UNM, which is the college in Albuquerque or in New Mexico, but had to decline the scholarship because he already had 3 kids. Yeah.
He had to decline it?
Yeah, he was like, I can't go to school and like raise my family. So He went into working full time.
Wait, so he had three kids by the time he was ready to go to college?
Yeah, well, at that time, I think he had one. Maybe it was two, and then the third one was on the way.
How old was he?
Yeah, he was like fresh out of high school.
Okay, so was he a bit rebellious in his teen years?
Yeah, he won't talk about it, though.
Okay, that's fair.
Like, yeah, I've heard stories from, like, you know, my brother and sister, like, yeah, he used to party and stuff. And I was like, what? My dad? What? But it makes sense, you know, he would have been young. He was young.
Yeah.
Good looking. Like, uh-huh. You know, just
all American. Yeah.
<That's it>.
Yeah. I'm real impressed with your ability to decide that you're going to run away and not just commit to it, but you planned it out. And it reminds me about you going on all of your overlanding adventures and planning them out to the T and all the little details.
I'm getting out of here.
And the yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking of. I was like, oh, he already had a place to stay. He figured out what time he was going to leave. He figured out where he was going. He figured out who was going to pick him up and take him there. And like, that's way beyond what most kids do who run away for an hour to their treehouse and then decide to come back.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Looking back on it now, it's like, it's, I guess, pretty wild.
Chad's got some follow-through.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
Oh, this is crazy. Yeah, I don't really talk about this stuff a whole lot.
Well, what was junior, senior year like in high school?
So, you know, while I was living with my brother, I started dating. This was like my first like relationship. Started dating this girl, and I was just infatuated with her, and just like I thought I was just in love. Like, this is the girl I'm gonna marry, and I was like obsessed. Like, to a degree of like it being unhealthy.
Yeah, I mean, who knows that in high school, right, Josh?
Please.
Right, Josh?
I mean, completely understand.
And it got to a point where, like, you know, I'll do anything for her. And this one weekend at my brother's house, you know, they were out of town for the weekend on like some church event. I forget what it was. And my girlfriend came over. She obviously spent the night. And then my brother came back early. And
this is a movie.
The house was a mess, and their bed was a mess. And
that
used,
smelled used.
And,
oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it got pretty bad, and my brother was pretty upset. And I decided to like leave again. I was like, I'm out. So at that time I had a Ford Bronco.
Gosh, you just get cooler by the minute.
Yeah. And so I packed all my stuff in the Bronco and I was like, I'm done. I'm out.
I'm done.
I'm leaving. Out of here, man. And, my girlfriend, I didn't know where to go.
Wait, hold on. Can you reenact? Can you reenact? Like, give me the emotion. How did you say it?
Oh, I don't know, dude.
I'm done. Like, how did you do it?
This is like 20 years ago.
I know. Here, just play it. Here, I'll be your brother. It smells awful in here. Chad, this is the end of the line. You can't
I love
keep
her,
doing
man.
This.
I love her.
You don't know what love is.
This is ridiculous. I can't. You're just like mom.
If you're going to live here, there are some boundaries, Chad. I love you. You're my brother. But you have to, you can't cross the line like this. You've defiled my bed.
Whatever, man. Whatever. Nah, I'll do my own thing. I'm out of here.
That was awesome. That was awesome. All right, let's pick
That's
up from
probably
there.
Not how it went at all, but.
I'm done.
No, you don't tell me what I'm going to do. I tell myself where I'm going and how I'm doing it.
To the audience, to the people listening.
I felt like I was there.
To the people listening and watching, I've worked with Chad on hundreds of projects for the past, like, five, six years, and I can't count the number of times I've heard him point his finger to the ground and say, "I'm done."
It's whatever, dude.
Yeah, there's that too.
Okay, well, I'll toss you back the reins. You pick up from the point where you were like, "I'm done, bro."
Yeah, so I packed my Bronco and had my sleeping bag and like a pad and stuff, and just like pitched it in the back of my Bronco, and I was like, I don't know where I'm gonna go. I forget like if the first night I spent the night like at a park or somewhere, but I ended up like within a couple days or whatever, I ended up basically on the backside of my girlfriend's parents' property.
Oh my God.
Now my girlfriend at the time was an amateur barrel racer. Like she was really good.
Oh man.
And
red flag.
Very dangerous. Yeah. Those barrel racers, man, they're wild.
But then I can also understand the infatuation in high school.
Yeah. Yeah. So you know, she was into the rodeo scene, and her parents you know, were very wealthy, and they basically had like a mini ranch, like within, it was like in the Rio Rancho city limits, like kind of on the outskirts. So they had a big piece of property, like an indoor arena, an outdoor arena, and then their house. And then they had like a whole guest suite and like guest apartments and another like guest house, like on the property.
So they had so much stuff, you could pretty much park in the backyard and they wouldn't even notice.
So I thought, yeah. And so on the back side of their property, there's a trail that you know, you enter from the road and then you kind of wrap around the property, and there's an arroyo right there, like a little ditch, and there's a road between the ditch and their property line. And so I just pulled up like on the back side there, right there, kind of just like parked my Bronco. And that's literally where I camped out for like a couple of days, and my girlfriend would like bring me food and stuff.
Oh my gosh.
Living the dream, bro.
Dude.
Living the dream.
I'm not going to school or whatever. Like,
if we were buddies, if we knew each other back then and we were both just like fresh out of high school and that was going on, I'd be like, bro, sick, dude. Like, dude, I hope I'm like you one day. That sounds awesome. From like a you know, a childlike perspective.
From a bachelor perspective.
Yes, from a bachelor perspective.
I don't know what I was doing. I had a job. I ended up getting a job at like a pizza parlor, and like, you know, I was serving pizzas and like.
I was gonna ask where your money's there. Coming from.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, that's pretty much it. Like, I was working at that pizza joint for like, I don't know, part time or whatever. So that would pay for like gas and, you know, food and stuff.
This was in the late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah, this was like.
You wanna know how I know? Because you said pizza parlor. I'm pretty sure that parlor, that word went out of the lexicon circa 2001.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like 20 or yeah, like 2004-ish, yeah. Something like that. Yeah. So her parents ended up like finding me out there, and then they actually ended up, they're like, I told them the whole story, like I ran away from home, like my parents are just overprotective, and like I just can't live like that, you know.
Let's play it out. Let's play it out. I'll be your parents. I'll be your dad. Son, what are you doing out here?
Dad, like, I love having him here. I take him food, and we hang out in the back of the Bronco all the time.
You really jumped into that role naturally. So he's your girlfriend.
Someone had to fill the role.
Oh, Chad, what are you doing in here?
Dad,
why are the windows all fogged up?
Be polite.
What are you doing?
Be polite.
Dad, I love him.
Dad, I love him.
Chad, you need to answer for yourself. What are you doing back here?
Oh my gosh, I don't even know. I can't do it.
Okay, all right, all right.
Well,
go on.
To try.
Yeah. You're getting an Oscar for that, Josh.
Thanks.
So what was the reaction? Yeah. What was the reaction?
So they were very like receptive and like, well, you can just stay here. Like, that's fine.
They were like, what if that was just like him in the future? And it was just like Chad in the future, and he came up on his old self, not realizing
like
it was him.
Like the kid?
Yeah, like the kid, and he was just like, whatever, dude.
Yeah.
It's whatever.
Dude, so that era was also like I'd gotten out of skateboarding, and I kind of went into my, like, the scene phase. So, like, you know, screamo metal music and stuff. So I was wearing like super ultra tight pants and like my checkered Vans, and like I had long hair, wearing a beanie and like my black band t-shirts and stuff.
Do you have
and
a choker?
I was just like, no, I did have a spike belt though.
Oh, nice. You mean a studded one?
Yeah, studded. Yeah.
Was it three rows or two?
Two.
I had a three row studder.
Oh, you
were
dog.
Any of them, yeah, were dude. Any of them missing, or were they all still there?
I don't. I think a couple of them actually were, because I, like, before, like, I stopped skateboarding, like, I would wear that belt and, like, just taking slams all the time. But, yeah, that's, you know. Anyways, it was just really interesting because my girlfriend, amateur barrel racer, like, making a name for herself, and then some, like, emo kid, like, trying to, like, be with her, you know.
Wearing eyeliner.
Who were some of your favorite bands back then?
Taking Back Sunday, Early November, Brand New, like all, yeah, like all those bands, which I still listen to today.
Yeah,
good for you.
Oh, for sure.
Good.
I'll never leave that phase of music.
So that's where your typical Johnny Cash attire comes from.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's strange seeing you in a light gray.
Yeah, I'm trying to venture out, you know, in my late 30s, mid 30s.
You know what also is weird is whenever you see people who never grew out of goth. And they're like 40 and they still wear eyeliner and paint their nails.
Their
and
hair's falling out.
Yeah, and they like powder their faces so they're whiter.
Yeah. So how long did you last at her house?
Yeah, so her parents took me in. I lived in the guest house.
Wow, you got upgraded.
I did. Got a big upgrade. Yeah, had my own room, bathroom. You know, it was good.
Did you call back home? You're like, look at me now, Mom.
I got new parents.
It's not a phase, it's a lifestyle.
Yeah, I heard a story at one point, like my girlfriend's mom ended up calling my mom and was like, you're a terrible mother. And like, I can't believe you would treat your son this way. And like, this is why, like she totally had my back on a lot of this, which was wrong, like totally wrong. Cause my mom is like the sweetest, nicest lady, like, yeah, it was horrible. I feel really bad now. But,
let's not play that one out.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was there for probably a good couple, three months.
Wow.
Nice.
And then my brother calls me.
Oh, okay.
Oh, boy.
Tell me.
It's like, this is ridiculous. Like, you come live with us again. Like, we're sorry. We overreacted. Just come back, basically. And he was like, if you do come back, like, yes, we'll still have some house rules, but.
So you went back to your bros?
Yep, went back to my brother's, you know, continued in school. Got really sick, actually. Got, like, a really bad case of vertigo.
And you're what age at this point, 18?
No, I was still, like, I think I was going on 17. Yeah, I was going on 17.
Because you had your own Bronco at this point.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that basically cut off, like, my schooling. Like, I had missed so much school because of the vertigo that I would, like, have to retake, you know, sophomore year. So I basically kind of dropped out of school and... You know, I got better after like a month and a half. Vertigo is like a serious thing.
What do you feel like? Because I mean, I remember the old Alfred Hitchcock Vertigo film, but I don't.
Yeah, so I was at school one day, and you know, between classes or whatever, it just like I was really dizzy, and it just like if you know my equilibrium was off, so it just was like. It was almost like I was drunk, but, you know, obviously I wasn't drinking or anything. And somebody actually, like, ratted me out to, like, the principal.
He's like, that guy's got vertigo. He's been doing vertigo.
Well, no, he was like, there's... yeah, right. like, it's a new drug or something. But they were like, there's somebody drunk, like, stumbling through the halls, like, getting to their locker and stuff. So I got into class and then... You know, the principal came into the class and like pulled me out and took me back to her office and was like, I got reports that you're like wasted. Have you been drinking? And I was like, No, I just, like, I don't feel good at all. Like, I feel like shit. And they took me over to the nurse's office. She was like, she called my mom, you know, which was kind of weird because I hadn't seen my mom in a long time. And she went and picked me up. And, you know, she tried to get, like, a bunch of specialists involved, like doctors, ran a bunch of tests on me, and they, like, just couldn't figure it out. And it finally just came to the conclusion, like, it was a really bad case of vertigo. And, like,
how do you get something like that?
Dude, I don't know.
I think it was stress and nerve related.
Maybe. Just had lived, like, you know, a bunch of years in my short few months.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, you figured out more by the time you were 16, like housing, feeding myself, making my own money.
Resiliency as a whole.
Yeah. So, you know, my mom and I kind of like came back to speaking terms, and I still lived with my brother. But like I said, you know, that lasted for like a couple months, month maybe. And then I ended up going on a trip. So this is where I kind of started experimenting with like partying and some drug usage. So at the time, my girlfriend and her friend were going out of state. They asked me to go with them, and I was like, yeah, sure, whatever, you know. And went with them, and they had some white powdery substance with them. Yeah, it was fun. So I kind of dabbled with that for one day. And then that was like one night into the trip, and we were at a hotel. And that trip just, we called it off for some, I forget exactly why. I think it was like the truck's not running right or something. So we ended up staying the night at the hotel and then went back, you know, home. And after like a night of like partying a little bit, it wasn't crazy. It's not like, you know,
Yeah.
It's a crazy drug addict.
Yeah, sure. Know? Okay.
Just a little bump or two, you know?
Yeah. It's no big deal. Yeah.
And
nothing bad ever starts that way.
You know, so we get back and you know, I sleep it off or whatever. And then the next morning I ended up like getting up and like walking downstairs, and I pretty much passed out and like fell down the stairs. And I was like, I kind of came to and was like, it's really weird. Like, I wasn't hungover or anything. It just like happened. And so I called my girlfriend, and she was like, you need to go to the hospital. Like, that's not normal. And I was like, I don't want to go to the hospital. And she's like, I'm coming to get you. I'm taking you to the hospital. So we went to the hospital, and because I was minor, they had to call my parents.
Oh, no.
And they were like, what happened? And I was trying to get around the fact that I had just done, like, you know, coke a couple nights ago. And the doctors ran, like, a bunch of tests, different tests on me, and you know, my parents were in the room with me, and the doctors were like reviewing the tests or whatever, and they come in the room and they're like, so we're gonna have to hold you overnight. And I was like,
not
I just like
I
lost my I was like, what do you mean? Like, I have to get home. Like, I have to be with my girlfriend.
Oh.
And I like, and they're like, no, we're keeping you overnight to run some like heart tests and stuff. And I was like, I was furious. I was so mad. And my dad was like, no, you're doing this. Like, this has to be done. And I got pissed at my dad. I remember like I was sitting on like, you know, the doctor, whatever that seat is, like the long seat in the doctor's office or whatever. I remember like popping off of that and like shoving my dad out of the way. And I literally just bolted out the door and ran like out of the hospital. And there was a bus route in front of the hospital, and like I saw a bus there, and I just ran over, got on the bus, and was like, I'm out of here, man.
I'm done.
I'm done. And God, dude, I am so stupid. But
I'm continually impressed with your ingenuity and ability to find some mode of transport to get somewhere.
Or to be done with something and set your mind to it and decide, I'm just not putting up with this anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was dumb.
Right or wrong, whether you were right or wrong, that like innate sense of,
you drew a line.
I don't like this, I'm going to do this instead, and then you do it.
Yeah.
Channeled the right way has taken you great places.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, it's wild to hear these stories because it's like, oh, this was
That's
Chad.
Where this came from, yeah.
I guess so.
Were you wearing a hospital gown that was open in the back?
But somehow I knew you were going to ask that. I was going to say yes, but no. I wasn't.
That's how he got everybody in the hallways to stop trying to grab him. He was just like, get out of my way. I'm done, I said.
Yeah, so.
Get off me, Dad.
You know, they called security, and security came on the bus, removed me from the bus, brought me back in to the room.
Please tell me you were kicking and screaming like someone from an insane asylum, like on both arms. Like,
honestly, that's kind of how I was. I was like, I have to see my girlfriend tonight.
Because tonight will be a night that I will fall.
Oh my God, so emo, dude. But yeah, I stayed there over the night and they ran tests on my heart and they're like, yeah, your heart is like, you know, kind of skipping a beat every now and then. And that's, you know, they had tested me for drugs and they found coke in my system. And they had to tell my parents. And, you know, I guess while I was sleeping that night, you know, my parents were talking to the doctors and stuff. And the next morning when I woke up, I just see this like random lady comes in and she has like her notebook and like her binder and stuff. And she was like, hey, Chad, I'm here from like the psychiatric like department. I just want to ask you some questions and yada, yada. And so, you know, we have this conversation for like 10, 20 minutes. And I was just like, when can I go home? Like, when can I get out of here? Like, I have to see my girlfriend. Like, I got to do this. I got to go do that. And, you know, my parents came back in and they were like, it is, basically like not safe for you to leave. And we're taking you to like this like troubled teen like holding center, like off site or off campus from like the hospital. So this area, they, you know, it's fenced in, like there's barbed wire, like not that it was a prison or anything, but it, you know, it was fenced in, there was like barbed wire like inwards, so like people couldn't get out or whatever. And you know, they take me there and they drop me off and I'm in like a house with like, I don't know, some really actually messed up kids, like kids wanting to kill themselves. Like I had to take the shoelaces out of my shoes, like I couldn't have a belt. And they basically like took all of my belongings from me and like gave me like, you know, just like basketball shorts or something and like a t-shirt.
Not the kind of help you needed at the time.
Exactly. Yeah, and then from there it was like 2 or 3 days and like they were trying to assess like what to do with me because I wasn't suicidal. I wasn't addicted to drugs. Like all I was just a rebellious teen that was like going through a phase or whatever. And so they, you know, a couple days go by, I get pulled into like the counselor's office. And my brother and my mom were there. And they walk in and they're like, all right, here's some of the options we have for you. We found this really great, like, program in Utah. And we know you like the outdoors. We know you like camping and, like, you know, getting outside and stuff. This program is like a 6-week long program, and you essentially will be in a group with some other teens and a couple of counselors, and you're just hiking every day and like going to different spots and like doing some therapy and stuff. And they were like, it's honestly a really great program. And then the other option, because at this point they were not letting me go back home, the other option was military school. And I was like, well, I guess I'll go do the outdoor thing. Which was good, because later on, while I was doing that program, I found out that most teens that were kind of in the same situation as I was, they would get woken up in the middle of the night. It was not their decision at all. They get woken up by two random people, and they get taken out and like by these two random strangers and thrown in a car and like jetted off to this program. And I was like, that's not my story at all. Like, I chose to come here. I mean, obviously it was kind of like, you know, a decision between a couple different options, but that's wild. Yeah.
At least you weren't abducted. And that probably changed your perspective once you were there.
Yeah.
As in, like, out of the choices, I chose this.
Yeah. So that was in Utah. And I also found, like, when I started the program, like, you know, there had been kids there for, like, well, one, I get to, like, their base camp facility. And then they loaded me up with, like, my backpack and, you know, a bunch of gear that I needed, like sleeping bag, shelter, all that stuff. And then they carted me out like 2 hours out in the middle of nowhere and just like dropped me off with the group that I was going to be in. So I get out there, you know, some kids had been there for like 3 weeks already. Some had been there for like 6 weeks, like getting ready to leave. So I was going through this program, you know, we would hike every day for 12 to 14 miles, get to our next like destination, set up camp, and like, you know, we had to, there was like different stages of the program that you could progress to. So they called it like earth phase, wind phase, water phase, fire phase, something like that.
Captain Planet camp, Captain Planet right there.
Yeah. And it's like the more you progress to these different stages, the more...
you can see the colors of the wind.
Talk about tripping out, dude. No, the more, like, I guess leniency that you had for being in the program, and you'd get things like, you know, like a camp chair, like a Crazy Creek camp chair or something for progressing to this next phase. And
they start to trust you more.
Yeah, and, like... Honestly, it was actually pretty cool. Like, you got to learn how to, you know, bust fire from like a top rock in a spindle, and like, you know, carve a bow out of a stick. And like, if actually one of the things was, if you didn't bust a fire that night, you had to eat cold, which was cold beans and rice. If you did bust a fire, you could make hot food. And a lot of the times it was, like Friday nights was meat night, so they would actually cart out, you know, meat to cook. So
So if you couldn't bust fire,
you had to eat cold
raw meat.
Well,
or you wouldn't get meat. You'd be eating beans and rice.
Yeah, meat was like a specialty on Fridays, but the rest of the time it was like beans and rice.
I'm not familiar with the term bust a fire.
No.
What is that? Are you just talking about like stones?
Yeah, so like you carve a spindle and you have a top rock, and then, you know, like whatever you're like producing your ember on, like it could be like, you know, part of a tree trunk or whatever, or a piece of wood or something. And then you have your bow, and you wrap your spindle up with like within the paracord. You have your top rock, put that on top of your spindle, and you're doing this whole thing to create friction. And the bottom of the spindle, depending what your depending on what your tender is, like, you know, you can produce an ember. And then you obviously have that, and you're blown on it.
So that's called busting a fire.
Creating a fire. Yeah, just the whole process.
Gotcha.
Huh. So you had the chance, essentially, to be out in the woods and earn your freedom again.
Yeah. So I thought. Yeah.
Oh, crap.
Oh, man.
So...
Here we go.
Story. I'm looking forward to another...
Click!
Yeah.
Here we go.
I'm looking forward to another... I'm done with this.
I'm done!
Well, okay, so, you know, like 4 weeks in or whatever, you know, obviously I had made friends with all these guys. Oh, by the way, the first week I was there, I was on suicide watch. So I had to sleep with the counselors, like, in their shelter. Couldn't have shoelaces or anything like that.
But were you suicidal?
No, not at all. It's because, so we got mail while we were out there from like our loved ones or whatever. And I got a letter from my girlfriend.
No, don't yes. say it. Can I play it out the way I think it's going to go?
Sure.
My dearest Chadwick. I love how tall and slinky you are and how much you resemble a younger, more chiseled Clint Eastwood. Mm-hmm. But you camping out in my parents' backyard really did it in for me, and I can't see you any other way. No. We can't go forward. Thank you for all the amazing times. Your girlfriend, the barrel racer. Was that how it went? Was that how it went?
Give or take.
You got a Dear John.
Yeah.
What did
at
it
camp?
Yeah. What did it actually say?
So it was just a letter from my girlfriend saying, like, hey, I can't see you anymore. Like, when you get back, like, I'm breaking up with you, my parents, you know.
When you get back, I'm breaking up with you. Like.
Yeah, like it was a breakup letter.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
She's trying to keep you on the hook for another 4 weeks.
No.
Like, you can't see anybody, but when you're back, we're done.
Yeah, no. No, it was like, yeah, we're done.
She was like, we're done.
Goes around, comes around, right? Yeah, and her parents were like, yeah, we don't want you seeing him, like, ever again, blah, blah, blah. So it was a breakup letter, so.
Did they ever find out the coke was hers?
Nah.
Yeah.
Nah.
You're too good of a guy to tell them.
You are. Yeah.
You know.
What a Chad.
But yeah, they put me on suicide watch, even though I was like, I read it, and I was like, I get it.
Yeah. Whatever, yeah, dude.
It's not coming.
It was probably the fact that you're pumping My Chemical Romance through your Walkman whenever they walk by you after that. And they're like, he's definitely going to like do something bad. Yeah. Take his shoelaces.
Actually, it was Seosin that I had stuck in my head. I forget the name of the song. Third Measurement. I think that's the name of it. Anyways, that whole 6 weeks, that was a song that was playing in my head the whole time. So I have a very, like, I keep that near and dear to my heart. That song got me through a lot.
I wonder if we can get royalties on, or if we can get a license on it. Put it as the intro song.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll see what we can do.
But yeah, I mean, I worked the program, and a few weeks in, you know, a couple of my friends were like, yeah, nobody ever stays here. They tell you you're staying for 6 weeks. Nobody ever stays for 6 weeks. They stay for like 10.
Oh.
Like 8, 10, 12 weeks. And I was like, what?
That feels like forever.
Yeah. There's nothing I could do about it. I mean, I would just go work through the program, work through like therapy sessions, you know, hone in my skill as a survivalist outdoor guy. And then the last week, it was my sixth week, and we got to a spot and we were doing trail maintenance for like a week. So we had a set camp for a week, which is, you know, unusual because we were moving every single day. So that was nice to like set up camp for that week, and we would just work on trail maintenance for whatever trail was. And I remember counting the exact day of the sixth week the end of the sixth week. And that day, the two counselors came up to me. They took me back to like the base camp and they were like, you're going, like, that's it. You're going home. Your parents or your mom and your brother's here to pick you up. And I was like, what? Like,
elated.
Yeah, just like super stoked. Like, I can't believe I'm leaving, because I was expecting to be there for at least 8 weeks.
Were you a little sad?
Huh?
Were you a little sad having to leave?
Yeah, I cried for sure. It was, yeah. Because you, like, you know, you make these friends and, like, you bond with them. You guys are all living together and, like, going through the struggle together, you know? So it was a 2-hour ride back to Salt Lake City, or like the outskirts of Salt Lake. And, you know, pulled in, mom and brother was there, and they were like, yeah, we're picking you up. Like, what do you want to eat? It was like the first thing they told me. I was like, I want a double bacon cheeseburger from Wendy's now. So we went to Wendy's.
It's like that scene from Iron Man where he gets back and he's all like, I want a Whopper.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. you know, we're sitting there eating. And my brother was like, so, you know, we've been in contact with the counselor and therapist out there, and they say you need more time. And I was like, what do you mean more time? And they were like another program or whatever. And I was like, you mean to tell me I'm not going home? And they were like, no, we found another like program in Montana that you'll be there for another year.
What?
Oh my gosh, dude.
Yeah.
A year?
At least a year.
Dude.
And I was like,
is this co-ed? Or is it all boys?
No.
So it's all dudes?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Is a 17-year-old dude saying you're going out to Montana for a year with a bunch of other dudes? No, thank you. You kidding me?
Military camp's starting to sound pretty good right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You'd run into more girls in the military.
I didn't know. I was honestly speechless. I didn't know what to do. And I was like, are you kidding me? Like, this is a joke, right? And they're like, no, we're flying out tomorrow morning to Montana.
Oh my gosh.
Dude, that
you have no stability.
Yes,
in your life.
None.
You have no consistency.
Yeah.
It probably doesn't feel like anyone in the world is looking out for you.
Yeah.
Were you pissed? Were you mad?
I was upset because I was wanting to go back home and like get to see my friends, and like, you know, before all this happened, like I was playing in a band. And I was like excited to get home and like get back to the band and like just, I don't know, have a normal life, you know, normal teenage life, whatever that means. But yeah, so we flew out there, and it was like this little, on the outskirts of Thompson Falls, Montana, which is close to Missoula, one of the bigger cities out in Montana. But Thompson Falls was the main town that we were out of. And then you drive like, you know, 20, 30 minutes outside. And it was like this log cabin out in the middle of nowhere that houses, you know, 14 people-ish, something like that.
This had to have been right after 9/11. So flying was not easy anymore.
Well, no, at this point it was like about 2005, 2006.
Oh, you're way past it. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Gotcha.
Yeah. So actually I
you're in your 20s at this point.
No, I was 17.
How old are you?
I'm 35 now.
Okay.
Yeah. So I was, you know, this whole thing kind of happened when I was 16, 17. So, and that's why I couldn't be like, no, I'm not doing it, because I was 17. So
they still had you for a year.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it was just basically like almost like a boarding school / prison camp.
Did you learn anything? Were there benefits to being there?
They told me everything that was wrong with me, and it wasn't really uplifting at all. And it was like, you're going to work through these therapy sessions. You're going to AA, So Alcoholics Anonymous, because that's just how it worked as a group. Like, there were some actual kids there who were, like, addicted to heroin and, like, actually bad teenagers. I was not necessarily one of them. Like, there was one kid there who got busted for, like, Grand Theft Auto, you know, as a minor and just all sorts of stuff. So
they pull you out of this program that you're progressing through. You're actually kind of thriving in a way. And they stick you in a borderline prison camp that doesn't have any aspect of, like, survivalism or anything like that?
No, it was basically just one big therapy household.
Ugh.
Yeah. And, you know, come to find out, that was actually one of the more lenient programs in that city, or, like, around that little town. There was some other companies in that town that were actually a boarding school. So, like, they did all their, like, schooling and stuff, like, at their house. Where the program I was at was, we actually got to attend the local high school and, like, be able to, you know, have, like, friends at the high school and stuff. So it was a little bit better of a program than some of the other camps around that town, but it was still pretty bad. Like, you had a really strict schedule, like waking up, breakfast, therapy for an hour, go to school, do school, get off school, go back to the cabin, do chores, homework, another therapy session, and then go to bed by a certain time. And it was just kind of that cycle.
What's a therapy session look like with at that age? Are they just asking you questions, like how you feel, asking you about your day, trying to bring, like, dig into childhood trauma? Like, what's this?
Yeah. Like, why do you think you are the way that you are, type of shit? And it was like, I'm just rebellious. I'm not addicted to drugs or anything, like, you know?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. And, like, you know, the program had, like, a special workbook that you had to go through and, like, you know, write and, like, answer questions and all sorts of stuff. And, yeah, it was, like, a whole year of that. You know, the weekends consisted of, like, Saturday was hard labor, like, working on the ranch or the cabin that they were at. Like, I remember one of the Saturdays we had to go log some trees and it was just pissing rain. And the owner was like, yeah, I don't care. We're like, this is what we're doing. So we spent all day, like, chopping down, like, massive trees in the middle of nowhere. And it was just pissing rain. It was cold. Like, we just had to suffer through it.
And you did this for a year.
Yeah. Did this for a year.
And, like, you're getting close to graduation age. Did you graduate from that program? Like, what?
Yeah, so I turned 18 while I was in the program, and I, you know, you have the decision, like, you can leave, or you can stay, you know, for a little bit longer until your parents come get you and whatnot. So I opted to stay, and my parents came out, it was like a couple months later, something. Well, no, actually, I wasn't at the full year yet. So I think I was like maybe 4 months away from hitting that year mark, or I forget what it was, 3 months, whatever. Anyways, you know, just waited for my parents to come get me. And there was some stipulations on going home that I had to, like, sign off on. Like, I wouldn't hang out with my old friends. I wouldn't try and contact my, you know, ex-girlfriend now. And I had to, like, finish out my senior year of high school. And I agreed to all that. So my parents came and got me, took me back home. Or my mom and my brother came and got me. My dad had basically been removed from this whole thing. He was totally against sending me away. He wanted to just keep me at home and was like, I will put him to work and, you know, raise him like he should be raised, you know?
Where was, like, did they push your dad out of the equation? Was he trying to be like involved? Like, how is this?
I think he was trying to be involved, but my mom was just so worried about me and like my future and stuff. And she honestly thought this was the best option for me. I'm pretty sure that program, both those programs, was around like $80,000. So she had spent like my whole college fund just like trying to make me better, so to speak. But yeah, so, you know, I get back home. I was living with my mom for like a week, and then I decided I'm going to go live with my dad. And while I was living with my dad, I was working for him and also going to school, finishing out my senior year of school in a program at night. Not like the programs that I was just talking about. It was just like a, almost like a, I don't know what you call it, like a connection school. So I was still able to graduate high school. I just had to go do their classes and stuff at night. So I did that, ended up graduating high school, and then continued to, you know, work for my dad.
What kind of work was it?
So he owns a landscape and irrigation company. So it was at that time, like, you know, while I was trying to develop like management skills and all that stuff, like I was doing a lot of the hard labor. So
gotcha.
Probably good for you.
Yeah. And like, you know, over time it evolved into like project manager and like working on the backside of the business and all that. So, I mean, great experience, like learned a lot. But yeah, during that time too, like, you know, I came back from the program, I kind of fell back into my old ways, started hanging out with my old friends, partied even more, did way more drugs, never got addicted to anything. It was just like a good couple of years of just like, hey, we're having fun, we're gonna go drop some shrooms and walk around the woods and just like, yeah. I mean, it was a party phase, but I still managed my like responsibilities. So like graduating high school, keeping a full-time job, all that stuff. And that, yeah, I met another girl at that time, and she is basically what like took me out to Colorado. Like, she ended up moving out there, and that's when I like picked up and left and moved to Colorado.
What did you do in Colorado to like sustain yourself?
I didn't know what I was gonna do, and I applied everywhere, like retail stores, restaurants. Like, I didn't want to do landscaping. I was just kind of like fed up with that. I didn't know where to go. Honestly, I was pretty lost. Like, just trying to figure stuff out. And I ended up getting a job at a retail store in the stock room. And, you know, during my time in Colorado, I basically worked my way up the ranks within that store and that company. You know, within a couple of years, became like store manager. Moved to a different store that was in Boulder, Colorado, to manage that store. And then the company, you know, would fly me out to various stores like throughout the country and help like manage some poorly managed stores. So, you know, I just was working my way up the ladder. And then, yeah, Colorado was a struggle. And, you know, about 5 years into living there, my girlfriend at the time, we were going through like a bunch of hardships, and we broke up. I ended up getting my own place, and I was just lost, man. Like, I didn't know what I was doing. Like, I couldn't figure out, like, I had picked up skateboarding again. That was like kind of therapeutic for me. So I'd go skate with my friends, and that's kind of where I started filming, since cell phones at that time started to get better with video, like you actually had an iPhone now. We started filming stuff on iPhones, and I'd always be like filming stuff, and Instagram finally, you know, was released to the public. Instagram was a thing, and so we'd post videos to Instagram and have just like short skating clips and stuff. Yeah, and honestly, God spoke to me, spoke to my heart, and told me, you have to go back home. Like, you can't keep doing this, man.
And I was like, I'm done. Yeah. So that makes me curious. Where does God kind of fit into all of this?
Because exactly. I grew up Christian. You know, my dad's a pastor. He's a minister. My whole family, like my grandpa was a chaplain in World War II. You know, both my mom's side of the family, my dad's side of the family, all Christian. That was my upbringing, you know, going to church all the time, you know, as a kid. And then throughout my teen years, I kind of just lost sight of everything. It's not that I like despised God, or I just fell away from him, you know, trying to live in the world with worldly surroundings. And it just consumed me. And I just kind of lost sight of, you know, Christ. And it was, you know, towards the end of Colorado, I kind of like started going back to church. And then that's when he just like put it heavy, heavy on my heart. Like, you can't stay here, dude. Like, you gotta go back home and like reset your life, essentially.
Was there a circumstance that brought this about? Because oftentimes that's like, you know, very seldom do people just like make a change on their own. There's usually something that happens, or maybe it's a bunch, maybe it's like death by a thousand cuts.
Yeah.
Was there something that happened, or was it just the general state of your life being in such turmoil?
I think it was a little bit of everything. Like, once I broke up with my girlfriend, because, you know, to be completely honest, like, I thought I was going to marry her. Like, I thought she was the one. And I tried to make that work so intensely that it just took like everything in me to try and make that work, and it just still didn't work. So, you know, when we broke up, I was in like a pretty dark state. I was going out, drinking a lot, you know, hooking up with random girls, just like not a healthy lifestyle. And like, you know, I started going to church again, and I was like, yeah, it just kind of all came to, and was like, can't keep doing this, man. Like, I got to reset. So, my brother, God bless my brother, he's always been there for me, but I told him, I was like, I'm going to move back to New Mexico. And he's like, oh, well, I'll fly out and like, I'll drive, you know, we can drive from Denver back to Albuquerque, and like, I'll help you pack up. And like, so he flew out and we packed a U-Haul full of all of my stuff. And my two cats, dude, those cats like sound stupid, but they've been there like every step of the way. But we went back to New Mexico, and I just was working for my dad again, this time more on like management side and like actually running a business side of things. And just, you know, got heavily back into church, and just, at that point in time, like back in New Mexico, is when my interest for firearms was peaked. And so I started getting into firearm training and the video work and starting the Instagram page and starting my own YouTube channel. And,
how did you get inspired by the, like, wanting to be good with the gun? Not just the gun itself, but where did you watch a movie? Did you watch YouTube? Was it?
So I've like, you know, Haley, Travis Haley, all those dudes, Lucas Botkin, like, honestly, all those dudes, like, after I saw them running around on the range, like, and like some competition shooters and stuff, I was like, you can shoot like that? I want to do that. So then, you know, I just started training. Like, it consumed me. I was out every weekend. You know, every month I was shooting a couple thousand rounds of rifle and pistol ammo, and just like drill after drill after drill. Ended up going to a Bear Solutions class with Drew Estel. That was like my first pistol class. And that's kind of where I met I met Steve. And started meeting friends within the industry. And they're like, oh, you do video? And I'm sitting there like, yeah, I do some video work. And did some work for Estel, you know, on some of his classes. And then I met Ian.
Ruination?
Yeah, with Ruination. And I was like, dude, here's the thing, like New Mexico, there's a lot of firearm enthusiasts here. There's no good training out here. Like, there's really not. It's all total garbage. And so I ended up getting Ian to come out and teach a class. And we held a class in New Mexico for the first time. And like, Ian and I just like, you know, we clicked right away and we became really good friends. And we actually still do that class. Like, I go back every year and we run a class in New Mexico. And it kept growing every single year. It's been really cool. But yeah, man, like Travis Haley, Lucas Botkin, like all these dudes who had big YouTube channels, just seeing them train and stuff, I was like, damn, I want to get good at that.
There definitely was a season in media where gun culture was not, I'm sure to a degree it was crushed and hidden from some people, but there was a season where people on Instagram and YouTube, those were really the primary two.
True Exodus.
Oh, yes, right. Dude.
That was like
Periscope, man. Lives before Instagram had lives.
Yeah, that was the guy. Like,
and I that's where I learned that dry fire even existed and that you can get good with that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But there was a period where so many people caught fire. To Colio Noir was, you know, doing
again
media at a high level.
There's so many people that I've forgotten to mention that have like
influenced.
Totally exactly.
Colion and Barrett Fawbush for me. It was those two.
Yeah.
Like Colion with like the mindset stuff and just the interesting stuff that he talked about, and then and the like shooting competitions he did on his YouTube channel. And then Barrett with just like
practical.
He's a normal dude.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, I can do that too.
Yeah. Right.
And I'll make videos too.
Yeah. And I was doing the whole training thing, like taking Estel classes and stuff. And then I started doing competitions, and that's where I went from like here to here, just by shooting competition. And like, I started meeting a bunch of different people, and one thing led to another, just ended up getting a super cool opportunity to move out to Tennessee because of, you know, the contacts that Steve had. Like, I met Drew through Steve, and like basically everybody who's in my life now has been because of the Instagram scene via 2018, 2019. And it just like took off. Like, you know, had the job opportunity to do video creation full time, moved out here. And, you know, that's what I've been doing for the last 3 years. And then now I've started a production company with two of my really good bros. One sitting right across
Saul,
from
dude.
Me.
Yeah. Saul.
Saul, dude.
Saul.
Oh, business partners. Which it's been a wild, crazy ride, but I go back to God told me to leave Denver to take me down the path that I'm on, and it speaks really, really heavy to me, you know, every time I think about it. And I always think like, man, if I just totally ignored what God put on my heart back then and stayed in Denver, I don't know what I would be doing.
What is something that's weighing on your heart now? What's the next thing you know you need to do? I know we've got all of our video stuff going on and we're passionate about that and we love it, but...
Yeah. Proposing to my girlfriend.
Okay.
It's a big one.
Yeah.
And starting a family.
Yeah.
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 Getting some littles running around.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
I mean, that's weighed on my heart for a while, and I could never find the right woman. Yeah.
Yeah, there's two things. It's not good for a man to be alone. It's the first thing that, you know, God's creating the earth and he creates things and says, and God saw that it was good. Yeah. And all of a sudden, it's not good for a man to be alone. It's the first written observation. Yeah. And then secondly, it's also unhealthy to be unequally yoked. And a lot of people take that in terms as far as like, well, yeah, she needs to have the same religion as me. I believe that that's true, but there's so much more to it. You can have people who are of the same religion, or even different dissects of the same religion, but if you are still not equally yoked in the same mission as far as life goes, you know, you were created for a specific garden, and it's not good for you to garden alone, to take care of your task at hand. Yeah. And if you find a partner that's awesome and amazing, but doesn't have the same willingness to partner with the projects that you've been handed, then that's unhealthy. But if you have found
the right person. I found her, and I had to go to New York, of all places. Why God put me there, I don't know. Well, I do know. It's because, you know, she's the one. And, we're equally yoked in every aspect of life. So it's, But yeah, that's kind of the mission for the next year.
Good. And forever, for that matter.
Well, and forever, but yeah.
Yeah, one of I don't think we've ever talked about this, and I don't know if I've ever verbalized this, but one of the things that always goes through my mind whenever we do these podcasts, and one of the reasons why I like to go back to like childhood stuff when we talk with people on here, not just to get to know them, but because it serves as like a mini memoir. And it's something that like I would feel weird going on a video podcast and talking about myself. Don't get any ideas. But I like doing that with other people, because one day when your kids are older, you can be like, oh, here's this. And though these stories may come out, I don't think I ever, even to this day, have sat down with my own dad or my own mom and said, take me from start to now.
Yeah.
And that's what these conversations kind of are. It's not just for our awesome listeners and our Patreon subscribers. It's not just that. It's as much for the person across from me as it is for the world, because this is your story. Mm-hmm. As of now, anyway. Yeah. What are there any other, before we wrap this up, are there any other things you want to leave behind, or dreams or goals that are on the horizon?
Gosh, man. I just want to create and produce the best life possible for my future family. And that is everything I am working towards right now in my life, is to set up a better future for them and for me, to be able to have a great life. Yeah, those are, I don't know, kind of my dreams and aspirations right now. Yeah.
Yeah, dude.
That's as pure as...
It's as good as
where
gets,
we sit.
And that's why we love you, Chad.
Yeah.
And the cool thing is, you know, a lot of people can pick up on some of those points, or they hear you verbalize that on a podcast. You're one of the few people in my life that I genuinely believe that through your actions. Working with you, doing life with you, a few adventures here and there, haven't really known you for that long. And there's a lot of people that would say, man, I just want to give my family a good life. And it's really just words.
Sure.
But yeah, man, through your actions, I believe it.
Yeah. There's so much going on. I mean, we haven't even gotten into like the overlanding stuff because that's a whole nother.
We're going to have to do a whole nother podcast.
We'll do a part two.
Yeah.
And we'll go back to your mid-20s. And we're going to talk about the nitty-gritty, crazy, wild details. And play out some more scenes.
Oh, gosh.
Yes.
And then we'll get into film theory and talk about, like, your take on, like, how...
Yeah, man.
Like, I mean, we can talk about film theory all day long.
Cinematography.
And the power of the visual medium. And, but we'll have to save that chat for another day, so...
That sounds good, man.
And I know you have big video projects in the works.
As do you.
Yeah. So, always. Always.
I mean, thanks, guys. It's, I'm always the one behind the camera, so it's kind of odd being in front of the camera and doing a couple different videos with you guys, but yeah,
it's been fun.
Hope it's good.
It was good.
Definitely fun.
Looking forward to more of these, dude.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for being here genuinely.
Thank you.
Do you want to close it out with your famous two words?
Whatever, dude.
No, the other two.
Oh, I'm out of here. I don't know.
I'm done!
I'm done! Yeah, that's right.